The date is March 25th, 1994, and we're watching D2, The Mighty Ducks. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Dean Portman to my Fulton Reed.
Hello, everybody. I'm Colin Stewart.
So this week, we're looking back at March 1994, when the movies and theaters were Above the Rim, Monkey Trouble, Naked Gun 33 and a Third, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, and of course our movie for today, D2 The Mighty Ducks, which earned $45.6 million on a mystery budget that I could not find it anywhere. The first movie was 10, and I thought, okay, I'll see what the third movie was and then I'll average them out. The third movie doesn't have one either, so we'll say probably somewhere in the 10-15 range is probably, yeah, but yes, like you said, one of those.
Gotcha. Well, there's going to be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want to take spoiler like a knuckle puck to the face, then please hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
See, I was thinking if you want the movie to remain a mystery like the budget is.
Oh, there you go. That would have been good, too.
So, there are two taglines that I found that appear on the poster for this movie. The first is, "The Mighty Ducks are back." Yeah.
Wow. Slow clap for that one.
Yeah. I mean, they missed a pun even. Like, they could have said, like, "The Mighty Ducks are quack." Come on. You know, I don't know. No, just "The Mighty Ducks are back." The second one, "The puck stops here." And, yeah. Again, the duck stops here. Come on. Lean into the pun.
Yeah.
Yeah, not very good. So, well, the Mighty Ducks are back, but we don't know anything else. So let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
I feel like if, I mean, like, there is Mighty Ducks.
You're just stunned.
Yeah, there is a Mighty Ducks show now, but I was wondering, like, if this movie came out now, a good tagline for the youth would be, "It slaps."
It slaps, yeah.
Or they could have used what I'm about to use. "The Quack Attack is back!"
Nice.
After his stint in the minors comes to an unceremonious end due to a knee injury, Gordon Bombay heads home to Minneapolis to work in Han's skate shop with Han's brother Jan. With his shot at the NHL gone, Gordon ponders his future, dreaming of bigger things than being a Pee Wee hockey coach. Fortunately for Gordon, Jan has been secretly pitching him to USA Hockey to be the coach of the Team USA squad at the Junior Goodwill Games. While he's reluctant at first, Gordon decides to take the gig after a rep from Hendricks Hockey pays him a visit and promises to make him the face of USA Hockey. With Bombay committed, USA Hockey makes the unprecedented move of mostly foregoing statistics-based team selection because Bombay already has a team. Captain Charlie Conway assembles the Ducks. In a couple of hours, they rollerblade through the city with reckless abandon, committing multiple acts of vandalism and possibly a murder or two. With the remnants of the last movie's team back in the fold, it's time to bolster their ranks with a few selections from across the country. But again, we need to question the scouting process that selects a guy that can't stop, a guy who never passes, a goon, and a figure skater. The new goalie is good, though. When the games begin, Team USA runs through their first few opponents, but then gets their asses handed to them by the vastly superior Iceland team. Meanwhile, Coach Bombay is living life in a big mansion, getting his brand on point and boning the Iceland team's trainer. Not cool. After the loss to Iceland shakes the team to its core, it's up to a group of local SoCal African-American street hockey players to teach Team USA how to play hockey like real Americans. In a boon for diversity, an injury to Adam Banks allows for more color on the team when they decide to let one of their street hockey friends, Russ Tyler, join the team. I guess maybe the scouts were really impressed by his knuckle puck. Meanwhile, Jan comes to save Gordon from getting grease stains on his clothes and convinces him to give up his fast-living lifestyle and become the Minnesota Miracle Man once more. Things are back in order as the team gels together and makes it to the championship game, where they come face-to-face with Iceland again. Despite a rough start, they manage to stay in it, and after a second intermission uniform change, the Ducks fly again to tie the game and take it to a shootout, where new goalie Julie Gaffney wins the game and teaches us that it doesn't pay to be fancy. There we go.
And that's our show for the week. If you like that, wow. Yeah, I mean, it's like, I can see where this conversation is going, because as you read that, I'm like, oh, I see all my notes like spread out in front of me being read out. Yeah. So the Mighty Ducks 2, I mean, I don't have a huge history with the Mighty Ducks 2. Of course, I loved the first one, and of course, I had to see the second one. But I was a little beyond the Mighty Ducks age. So, you know, it wasn't a huge part of my childhood. But of course, I love these movies. And when we did do the first one, I definitely discussed the fact that it had been a while since I had seen that. And I was confusing this one. I was waiting for the knuckle puck in the first one. That's the biggest thing, is I was definitely confusing those ones. So I guess these two blur together for me, the Mighty Ducks and the Mighty Ducks 2. So I don't have a huge history. This one, though, it was an interesting viewing experience for me, because I watched this one on my flight back from Mexico. And apparently, voice-to-text doesn't work if you don't have a network. That's what I found out. So I was hand-taking a lot of notes. So it took me about 4 hours to watch this 90-minute movie. So I've got a lot of detailed notes. But hey, you know, it killed my, like, almost my entire flight. So that was all good. Colin, what about you? You were the one that wanted Mighty Ducks. You've wanted this on for a long time since we had our first Mighty Ducks episode. So what's your history with this classic of hockey movies?
Yeah, like D2 came out when I was, you know, I remember like grade three.
Okay.
When I was probably just become, and it was probably, to be honest, like elementary school was when I was the most interested in hockey, like collecting hockey cards and that kind of stuff. Okay. And so I think I had just like gotten really into hockey at this point. And this movie, I watched D2 before I watched the original one. So this movie was like my entry point into the Mighty Ducks franchise.
Oh, okay.
And I just remember this, like, loving this movie so much, watching it so many times when I was a kid, watching it like back-to-back watches. Okay. And yeah, when I, like, the Mighty Ducks were my first, like, I'm a Colorado Avalanche fan now, but the Mighty Ducks were like my first favorite team, and it was all based on this movie. Like,
okay. Yeah.
So that's my history with the Mighty Ducks.
Now, okay, I need to ask this question, like, even before we get into it here. But am I to believe that in this universe, the Mighty Ducks do not exist yet, but the Arrowhead Pond in Anaheim does?
That was an interesting thing about, like, because I was trying to put this movie into, like, timelines. Because I remember even in the last one, I had some confusion because of, like, they were still the Minnesota. They go to visit the Stars, but they look it's like the Dallas Stars, but at the time, yeah, they were still the Minnesota North Stars.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was a weird thing. It's like, I mean, Disney, I'm assuming, owned the Arrowhead Pond at this time. So it's like, yeah, it's just, this whole movie is a giant marketing showcase for, like, look at our fancy new facility.
Yeah.
And whatnot. So I'm wondering, like,
I think I don't know much. The team itself had actually been playing for a couple years at this point. But I guess,
well, they came into the league in 93.
Yeah.
So, but I wonder if it was the night, because it was after the first movie, and this would have been the 93-94 season, and I feel like that's when the Ducks came into existence.
We're supposed to pretend in reality that the 93-94 season didn't ever exist, because the 94 season was what inspired them to make a team called the Mighty Ducks. Because are you up to this is where I was going, because I'm like, I wanted to ask this before we even jump into it. Are you up to date on Game Changers?
I'm not.
Okay.
I watched the first season, and then I don't know. When I found out Emilio Estevez wasn't coming back, For season two, I don't know.
Okay. Because they end,
not interested.
They end up in the Arrowhead Pond at one point in the season. And, of course, we've got the knuckle puck on display that the players touch for luck as they leave. So I believe there was an origin story there, or they were trying to retcon the old, the fact that this Junior Goodwill Games Championship, they decide, hey, wait, we've got an ice rink here anyway. We might as well just buy an NHL team. Huh? Like, I think that's kind of what they're retconning.
In Game Changers, they're saying, like, the actual Anaheim Ducks come out and touch the knuckle puck for good luck?
Yes, because it's on a podium on the way.
What?
Yeah. Now you want to watch season two. Well, let's jump into D2, The Mighty Ducks. It's directed by Sam Wiseman. It's produced by John Avnet and Jordan Kerner, and it's written by Stephen Brill, who is Mr. Mighty Ducks. He's involved in all the movies and Game Changers, of course. So this movie just straight up rips off the opening of the other movie right off the beginning. In the credits, we've got, like, you know, it's going credits, 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 world's longest credits, but we keep getting flashbacks to some event that's happening, and this is now Gordon getting injured in his tryouts for the NHL. You know, I still can't get behind the fact that Emilio Estevez, I'm supposed to believe that Emilio Estevez is going to make it into the NHL when they have scene and every NHL player around him just towers over him. Like, not just Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, all the other athletes tower over him too. Chris Chelios and all that shit, you know?
Like, how old is Bombay? Like, he's beyond 30.
Like
anybody who doesn't know anything about professional sports, but specifically NHL, like, 30 is like the twilight of your career.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The idea, like when he's talking to Jan and he's like, I was this close to making the NHL, you're like, no, you fucking weren't. Like, you weren't this close to making any professional league hockey team.
Yeah.
Like, you were this close to making maybe the A squad of your beer league team.
Yeah. Star player in the beer league. Absolutely. But the other thing that I was thinking in this whole opening is, I'm like, oh man, like, back in the day, they didn't do a very good job of, like, you know, like the deep fake de-youthing of people, you know, that they have nowadays. And then I'm like, oh, right. This picks up immediately after. That's right. His tryouts were immediately after the first movie, when he had already gone to law school long enough to be a successful lawyer. He had to be at least 30. Yeah, at least 30. Yeah. But for some reason, I thought this was like college days. Like, I forgot about the... Immediately following.
Yeah, this is one of those movies, like, I haven't watched in a long time, but as a kid, all I saw was hockey, and watching it as an adult, and especially watching it for this podcast, like, picking up on the actual story points of just Gordon's, like, his drive to, like, do bigger things and be a somebody and all that. Yeah. Like, I never realized any of that when I was younger.
Well, I'm sure we can agree right off the top that it's the exact same movie, right, as the first one? Story point wise, you know, like,
I would say no. I would say it's not, and it is in some ways, but in every way it's not. It's for the worse.
It's 85% the same movie. It really is.
Well, I just think, like, the only way I would say it was different is, like, they're not true underdogs like they were in the first movie.
Okay, like, that's fair.
In the first movie, he takes a team of, like, people that can't play hockey and turns them into, like, a championship team, and, like, you know, he beats, like, a personal rival of his.
Yeah.
And in this movie, it should have been a lot more about the old squad having conflict. I remember there being more of that, like the old squad having more conflict with the new people, which there really wasn't too much of.
Yeah.
It's this one I find is actually more about, it's less about the Ducks and more about Gordon and his like inner turmoil and how that like and essentially the team getting too big for its britches.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, a lot of it comes down to, first of all, the bizarre recruitment process that they have for a national fucking team.
Right? Yeah, come on.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, like, you have Averman, and the audacity of him to say, like, when you see Julie play, and he's like, well, we already have a goalie, Goldberg. Like, Goldberg is the worst goalie. Like,
yeah,
he's the actual worst goalie there is.
Yeah, he is. The only worst goalie is the new kid that they have in the Game Changers show, right?
But I wonder if there is any sort of tournament that would work that way, where you would just allow like maybe if, but even still, like, in what world do they just get to like walk on to Team USA and not even have to play a tournament against like other teams to decide who is going to represent Team USA or yeah, something like that?
Well, and when they bring in Russ, I mean, it's you don't even know if he can skate on ice. Yeah, rollerblades are different.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say, just looking at him out on the street, it's 50-50. It's definitely not what you expect.
I mean, that's how the Ducks all learned to skate, right? That's how they taught Fulton to skate in the first one. But, oh, yeah. Yeah. No, my thought was, like, and when you're putting together the national team, and this mm-hmm. is the best that you've come up with, is these people around the country that one can't stop. One can't, like, you know, it's like, why do they have to have quirks too? If you're looking for the best of the best, bring them the best of the best.
Mm-hmm. Also, the one thing another thing I didn't realize about this movie is how much Charlie is not at the forefront.
Yeah.
Like how much he's just like, he's just kind of in the background as this like hovering conscience for kind Gordon of. To every now and then like just chime in like, oh hey, like don't you remember like when it was fun?
Yeah,
don't you remember who you are? Like,
he's got the best, like, line though with the "you got paid." Yeah. when Gordon first comes back, yeah, about the job in the shop. And I like how they really quickly breeze over, and this is part of the reason why Charlie is put to the back, is because he's not trying to bang his mom in this one. So it's mm-hmm. like, but they quickly, it's like, oh yeah, no, she's dating someone else. It's like, she moved on quick, or she was like married to someone else or something like that. It's like, how long was he in the minors for? I don't think it was more than a year. Yeah.
Also, Gordon gets around.
Yeah.
Man, he went from like Charlie's mom to the Iceland girl to just magically like the teacher, Miss McKay.
Yeah.
Somehow like they seem to be. And then by the time you roll around to D3, all those relationships are gone, and he's just like this lonely guy again.
Yeah, he always is. Yeah, and it was the same Game Changers. He was lonely again, and then hooks up with that star kid's mom.
Right, yeah.
And now he's not in season two, so she's hooking up with the person in season two, right? Like,
yeah.
The hockey life is a tough one, I guess.
I wanted to talk about the... I think I mentioned this when we talked about the first one, but how oblivious I was to they have the brief cameo, I guess you'd call it, during the roller skating bit at the beginning where you see the Hawks from last year. And I always remember being, that's one of those things, like, just to show you how little things matter when you watch a movie as a kid, where I just like never even, I was just like, oh, those guys don't like them for some reason. They must be bullies. Like, I never knew the history.
Oh, and they're the worst bullies in the world. Like, they're just, they're so terrible. I hated them. But it's like, but yeah, that's the fan service for the people that saw the first one first. You know, like normal people. Starting with the second. You must have been so lost. What's going on?
That just goes to show you, all that mattered was I got to see hockey. And I mean, not even great hockey now that I watch it.
It's really not good hockey, And I'm sitting there. There was one point where I was actually getting really into it, and I was just kind of furious that the refs weren't making the calls. And, you know, it's just like, come on, ref, that was intentional. There was a cross check behind the play. What are you doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. I didn't know that it was a legal tactic on a face off to just punch your opponent in the face.
Yeah.
Without a call.
No, none whatsoever. Yeah, like, were they intentionally, like, not calling them?
I don't know. That would have been a good
side plot,
subplot line of, yeah, just like the refs were against them. Yeah, it's Svensson was paying off the refs.
Yeah. Apparently the original villain was supposed to be Russia, but at the time, like, USA was actually getting along with Russia, so that's why they made it Iceland.
Well, that was one thing, like, the idea that at this Goodwill Games tournament, you don't have Canada or Russia, you have Trinidad and Tobago and,
yeah,
Germany.
Would you be allowed to have steel drums in the arena to celebrate a goal? Is that racist? I don't know whether that's, yeah, you know, like...
I don't know. I also couldn't get over in the rollerblades how that one guy, when they go through the construction site, they knock that one guy into the wheelbarrow and then the concrete pours on him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that would kill you, would it not? Yeah. Like, I feel like that's for sure at least a WCB claim or something.
Yeah, the montage of gathering people up with the duck call, I mean, it escalates so much further. Like, it starts with, like, okay, Averman's just going to leave work? Seriously? Like, you've got no respect for the fact that your friend has a job? And then they pick up Goldberg, too. It's like, well, at least Goldberg, like, his name is on the restaurant, so he can probably leave early, but Averman works at a movie theater. But yeah, then stealing a guy's hat, and they're breaking through, like, fences, and, like, they're breaking so many laws.
Yeah, yeah. The one thing that also, I was trying to put it together later because it just stuck out to me, but at the end of the movie, in the big rousing speech, Bombay gets everybody to tell them, you know, like, where they're from. And I mean, granted, yeah, like, I'll give Goldberg and the ones who are, like, from out of state their thing. Goldberg, sure, he moved from Philly. That's established.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would have been curious to, like, actually map out, for all the other people who just say, like, they're in, I would have said, if you're in Minneapolis, they should have all been from Minneapolis and St. Paul. Because, yeah, you know, Twin Cities, they're close together, sure. Charlie could, well, they're connected. Charlie could roller skate from one end to the other, sure. But, like, they give a whole bunch of different towns. And I'm like, is Charlie just, like, skating through, like, Minnesota? Well,
I noticed that Adam Banks had a very distinct one. And I'm like, right, because he's from the rich neighborhood. But, you know, how the United States, yeah, it's like Aurora, Illinois is still Chicago. You know, yeah, it's a suburb.
It's like
of it.
Saying
it's...
you're from Millwoods.
Yeah,
like people say they're from Millwoods.
Yeah, yeah. So, gotcha. But I mean, but in this case, yeah, I think their municipalities actually still have borders. But and some of them could have been small town people that moved to the big city, right? But were still born in Minnesota. But yeah, no, I did notice that because in his big rousing speech, he also says that, you know, look at us, we're Team USA, we're from all over the country. It's like, no. 9 of you are from Minnesota, and then you've got like 5 others that are from around the country. It's no, you're not from all over.
Yeah, if I would have had this movie to do over again, I think it should have been like 2 of the Ducks, like, and Bombay, like, say, like, Charlie and Banks,
yeah,
got and Gordon all got selected to go join the Team USA squad, and then you have like this large that was actually from all over the country, and yeah, have that be more of the story about them, like, trying to, you know, gel with their new team and like create a new team atmosphere and all that stuff.
Yeah, but then it wouldn't have followed all the formulas.
True.
Yeah, yeah.
It is weird that they don't even explain really where all the other people are, like where Tommy and Tammy are. Like, Jesse's there. Where's his brother? Like, did he just decided to quit hockey in the off season or what? Especially because this is the off season.
Yeah,
we're meant to believe that this has been like a summer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, so yeah, Gordon wasn't even gone a year. That's how quickly Charlie's mom moved on. Yeah, I mean, we get the mention of Hans having gone to Germany, so now Jan is there. So instead of just recasting the role, they're like, no, we're going to make up a story. We'll get Hans out of there. But yeah, they could, definitely could have used with, like, explaining where some of the kids were, but whatever, just get with it. Because we got new people to introduce. We got to introduce all these new misfits, you know?
Yeah, I was really struck. I mean, it's actually kind of fitting that you called me Dean Portman, because Aaron Lore really struck out to me, because I was like, where do I know that name from? And it's from, he played Max Goof in a Goofy movie.
Oh, okay.
And he was also, which I can't place those two voices. They don't not,
yeah,
like, whatever. They don't sound the same to me. But then also, he's married to Idina Menzel, or Adela Nazim, if you're John Travolta. But I don't know. It was just weird. I've been watching Frozen on repeat, so I was like, oh man, this guy, he's right in my wheelhouse.
He's right in your wheelhouse. Yeah, and definitely not 14. Like, there's no way he's 14. And I thought that, you know, when the Hawks set up their tripwire and Fulton comes up behind them, and it's like, Jesus, I can't get my voice that deep. Like,
yeah, it's so weird that I almost thought it was ADR.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't
sound like...
The
Toxic Avenger guy came in and did the...
Yeah, it doesn't sound... When you hear... I can't remember. What's that guy? What's his actual name? Like, when you see him on Daredevil or whatever,
yeah,
like, he sounds so different.
Eldon Henson.
Eldon Henson,
yeah.
Yeah,
Eldon Ryan Ratliff is what he goes by in this one. But yeah, he now goes by Eldon Henson.
Hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, Foggy Nelson. Yeah, he does not sound like he could speak that deeply. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like he's doing his own weird, almost Batman, Christian Bale Batman voice.
That's exactly what it is. I also love how impressed the docs are when the limo pulls up. Right, you know, Bombay shows up with his new sports shadow guy that he has. And they're so impressed. They're like, oh, look at that. Oh, my God. It's like, bitch, your coach drove on ice in his limo in the first one.
Mr. Tibbles.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't do some sort of scene where they had all the ducks, tailgating on their rollerblades behind the limo.
Yeah, yeah.
Some sort of homage to the first movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But instead, they forget that they've seen a limo ever before. Okay, so with Mr. Tibbles, he's just a sponsor, right? Like, he's part of the Hendrix Corporation or whatever, right? He's the sponsor representative. Is he also a PR guy? Because he's trying to make this, you know, coach image, this Pat Riley-type image for Bombay. But yeah, is he a PR guy? And why does he always follow him around? I don't feel like an advertiser would send someone to be on your shoulder 24/7.
Yeah, like he's becomes Bombay's handler almost.
Yeah,
I don't know, that character was kind of like, I felt like that character didn't have to be in the movie as much. I almost feel like I remember when I was a kid actually thinking he was funny. And maybe, I guess, it worked in that aspect. But watching it as an adult, I'm like, it seems like they just think he's funnier than he actually is. Yeah. Like, he doesn't add that much to the movie except to get hit in the face with a puck. But like, yeah, after that, I feel like he could have just been gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Because there's the bit where he's on the ice with the coach during the first practice, and he's got the whistle and everything like that. And it's just like, why has it gotten this far in the relationship? I don't understand why this guy is following you around. But
I was trying to piece together the relationship between Hendrix and, like, USA Hockey. Like, clearly Hendrix is the sponsor.
Yeah.
But it seems like they have actual involvement maybe in the team. Because, like, why is he the one who shows up to offer Gordon the position and not, like... Like, you would have thought, like, USA Hockey would give him the call to get the job, and then the PR guy would come and be like, hey, like, we just heard you're the coach, we're the sponsor, like, we want to make you our guy.
Yeah. There is a board of directors for USA Hockey. I guess they figure that it's a movie for kids, so all you have to know is, corporations, the man. Yeah. You don't have to know how business actually works. Because I'm no expert on business, but something doesn't quite add up for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, the when I watched this as a kid, all that stuff completely, like, went way over my head. Like, all the, you know, corporate, you know, influence, whatever message they're trying to do with Bombay. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Oh.
Like, I never really got... I was more like, oh, he's betraying them by having ice cream with the Iceland lady. Like,
oh, okay.
That was my only main focal point.
And it's such an unearned relationship because, like, it goes nowhere. They go one date, as far as I know. Flirt a couple times in the hallway. That's their relationship. So it doesn't even become a through line. Yeah.
No.
Because they introduce the teacher first, and you think that, okay, that's going to be the romantic interest. And then, but there's nothing there either. They've got no chemistry.
Yeah, until he just shows up randomly after she's been coaching the team and gives her a kiss on the cheek.
Yeah.
That would not fly today.
No, I don't think so. No, that seems a little hashtaggy Me Too kind of situation. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Toots. Yeah, no taps good. Her in the butt. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the line. It's when they're looking at the Iceland team and Bombay's like, that kid's a teenager. It's like, have you seen your Bash brothers? You realize that they don't really look that like they're teenagers either.
Yeah, watching this movie as an adult is such a sober... Like, I think this for all the Mighty Ducks movies. Like, I remember we talked about this with the Triple Deke in the first one. But, like, when you watch it as an adult, as somebody who, like, is a fan of hockey and watches hockey, the hockey in this movie is surprisingly lame.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like I feel like whoever their coordinator was had never watched hockey. It's funny that they at one point use an alley-oop style play to score a goal, because when I was watching it, I was like, the person who designed their hockey set pieces thinks that hockey is played like basketball. Because everybody just goes forward. Like, no, like, there's zero defense.
No. And they don't realize how fast of a game hockey is either. So when you want to pull out some ridiculous thing, like you see the one guy skating towards Connie, and so the other guy hops over the boards, grabs his lasso, skates across, and manages to, you know, haul this guy in just before he can get to Connie. It's like, no, that was like 30 seconds worth of action that just happened. She would have already been hit 10 times.
Yeah. Yeah. She'd already been crushed.
But to a kid, it's like, ah, he did the thing with the rope. And it's like, okay, so that should have gotten you thrown out of the game right there. Damn it, ref, call something.
Yeah. I was always like, I love the one thing that they do is they make extremely sure that after they switch to the Ducks jerseys, that the announcer mentions that there's nothing in the rule book about... That was, like, the one piece of pertinent clarification they made sure to give.
Yeah. I noticed that, too. I made the same note because I'm like, oh, okay. Because I wanted to look that up. Because I was on a plane, I couldn't Google it right away. But I'm like, I want to look that up, but they put it in.
They didn't check the rule book when it comes to, like, hitting somebody who's nowhere near or, like, touching the puck.
Yeah.
Like, you can basically just block.
apparently taking off your helmet is supposed to be an instant whistle. If you're going to shoot the puck, you can't shoot the puck without a helmet. So as soon as Russ came out and removed his mask, he would have immediately been, the whistle would have been blown. No goal.
Well, also, there's that one Iceland goal where the Iceland player is going, he's on a breakaway and Luis is chasing after him. And they clearly fall well before the guy gets there and everybody just slides into the net, knock the net off the thing, yet somehow it was still a goal. Like, there's no way that wouldn't be a video replay to check and seal it. Like, you can't call that a goal unless you can prove the timelines.
Exactly.
There's also the thing
the net was knocked off. Like
the game tying goal, like Russ's knuckle puck. This was the thing that made me think that they're playing it like basketball. The assertion in that shot, because when time runs out and they're playing it like in basketball, if you release a shot, the clock runs out and that shot scores, it's still good. That is not the case.
No, it is like, not at all. Not like, even a little.
If the time runs out and the puck isn't in the net, it's done.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I was like, oh, that's so weird. But
yeah.
So, I mean, all that to say, technically Iceland should be the champs.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had an epiphany with this where I'm like, I don't think the Wolf is a bad guy. He's a good fucking coach.
Oh, like, yeah.
You know, that's the thing is they've built up this rivalry. Now, some of his tactics I don't understand. Like, you know, when Gordon Bombay is having a press conference, has it ever happened in real life where another coach is standing at the back of the room and calls him out during the press conference?
I've only ever seen that happen in professional wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, first of all, that wouldn't happen. But, you know, not cool, Wolf.
He's not like, whatever, Pat O'Reilly or whatever from the first movie. Like, yeah. Iceland actually isn't playing a dirty game.
No, and
from what I could tell. They're aggressive, but they're not dirty.
Yeah, and people are looking at the fact that they're playing dirty, and it's like, why? Because you called out Flying V, and he overheard you, so he has a defense to it?
Yeah, or...
No, Iceland's the bad guy, because they crushed the Flying V. It's like, well, you know, keep that shit on the DL, man. Like, don't scream out, Flying V! He did his homework.
the big revelation when Jan comes to Gordon, I feel like, should have been like, you have to actually coach.
Yeah.
Like, you have to actually be a coach and come up with strategy. Like, and I think that's kind of where this movie loses. Because in the first movie, you know, Gordon has that thing where he's... At first, he wants to teach the Ducks, or District 5, I think they are still, to play like Hawks. Yeah. And so he remembers how he was coached. So he's trying to teach them how to play dirty and, like, take dives and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And then part of it is, like, he learns, like, no, like, you want to play, like, an honorable game. And in this one, I feel like Gordon's arc should have been, like, stop paying attention to, like, how you look and, like, all the attention you're getting. Go be a coach and out-coach Svensson. Which, I mean, he kind of does in, like, a goofy Disney way. But not in a way that, like, feels good. It's not, you don't get, like, the feel-good moment that you get in the first movie.
Yeah, like, there's the moment that the Ducks are out on the ice, just it's their last practice, so they're just having fun with a beach ball. And then Wolf comes out onto the ice with his team, because he's always got his team on his back. But he's like, we're here to practice. And it's like, well, who had the ice booked? Because I believe that Wolf is probably the type of person that had the ice booked, whereas, you know, Gordon Bombay was probably like, hey, grab the lock cutters. We're going to sneak onto the ice for a late night practice. Like, it just seems like Wolf was probably checking the boxes. He doesn't want to get sent back to Iceland.
Let me ask you this. Do you think... I think there is one tiny change that could have made the story of this movie, like, 10 times better. Okay. And that would have been if Wolf was the guy who ended Bombay's minor stint.
Oh my God.
Like, it's feasible that, like, he could have been, they could have been, like, in the same minor league or whatever, like, if we're to believe that this league is one tier below the NHL, and you know, they mentioned, like, he was former NHL, but, like, because of his attitude issues, like, he got punted down.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would have made, because you have that moment at the press conference, but, like, overall, even in their little three-post game that they play,
yeah,
the personal thing is not there.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense why these guys hate each other. And I just think if he had been the guy, that guy who ended his or hurt his knee when he was in the minors, everything gets elevated to, like, an extra level.
Or even on, like, a smaller scale, because, like, the timeline, you'd have to have more time pass from his stint in the minors.
Yeah.
But what if it's like he was the goalie that saved the goal all those years ago?
Or that, yeah. Oh, no, because he hit the post. He
did it. Oh, right. He okay, right.
On that breakaway.
Yeah. Okay, I want to go back to felonies that the Mighty Ducks. What about crashing a Zamboni through the boards and glass of the ice rink? How are they still on the team?
About that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, how are you not just immediately thrown off of the team?
They're menaces. Like, they should be in juvie. But they're, like, kind of giving the, did I do that? Kind of, you know, like, they're irkling their way out of it. Ugh. Yeah, these guys are menaces. They shouldn't be in Team America. Fuck.
That's how you know. That's the difference between watching these movies as an adult. When you're a kid, you're like, hooray, vandalism, anarchy, chaos.
Yeah. So we get some unconventional training montages, of course. You know, tying them together to move as one, because he's got to make these new people gel with his old team. I feel like only the one guy is the problem. Like, really, you got to get rid of that tough guy.
Yeah. Portman.
He's just an asshole. God.
Yeah.
But in the montage, we find out that they get put on a Wheaties box, and Buzzkill Charlie is all, I guess he's unpatriotic and hates their Team USA and have sponsors. So he's just like, this doesn't feel right because we're not Ducks. Like, what is Charlie's problem? If I was a kid, I would have been thrilled by the idea of having action figures and video games and my face on a Wheaties box. Hell, I'd want that now. I want a Sean action figure now. But, like, when I'm 14, forget about it. That would have been the coolest thing ever. And Charlie's like, gee, guys, I don't know. We're losing our way. Fuck you, Charlie. That's what I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, like, isn't the goal as a hockey player, like, if not to play in the NHL, to at least, like, represent your country?
Yeah.
Like, shouldn't you be trying to always kind of level up?
Yeah. These uniforms aren't free. Someone has to pay for them. I don't know. I mean, you know, I watched that Welcome to Wrexham documentary, and they don't even have their team name on their jersey. It says TikTok, right? Like, it's like, hey, at least it still says Team USA.
Yeah.
And then you just throw it away at the end.
Those are hideous jerseys, though.
They're no Dutch jersey, that's for sure. I also like the tie-dye jerseys from the Trinidad and Tobago team.
Yeah, the verdict is still out on whether or not that's racist or not. I couldn't tell. I couldn't make a determination.
Yeah. I mean, when mixed with the steel drums, maybe? I don't know, yeah. But see, okay, what I don't get, though, is this is one thing I found was missing from the movie, is the integration of the new people. Because it's like, two scenes ago, Portman was such an asshole, and then now all of a sudden, like, he and Fulton are best friends. Right?
Like, yeah, like, we didn't get the real coming together moment.
Yeah, where's the gelling of the team moment? Yeah. You know, you should have had Trinidad and Tobago to figure out that your team wasn't quite working together. We barely made it through that one. We don't have to demolish them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing. Like, if you were to make this movie again, I think it's like you almost needed to use each game in itself should be a story.
Yeah.
Of, like, the team coming together and that kind of stuff and learning to trust each other. I mean, they kind of have that moment when they play the street hockey game, but I did note that for everybody's improvement and their, like, renewed power, the guy who literally learned absolutely nothing is Dwayne. Like, that guy will not pass a puck to save his life.
Yeah.
Even in the final, he still is doing his same little, like, pistol, like, start-stop thing, like, and loses the puck. And I was like, that guy actually has no character development. He never changes.
Well, and when they're playing that game, I'm sitting there thinking, maybe this is your Team USA. If they're just walking all over your own Team USA, maybe it's time to switch out the entire team.
Of all the people to return for the team as well, I think Aberman is like the most shocking. Like he has to be the worst player.
Yeah. Yeah.
Him and Goldberg.
Yeah, maybe when they were looking at who should step aside at the end when Adam Banks gets better, you know, yeah, maybe they should have been like, hey Averman, why don't you sit this one out?
Yeah, I didn't get that. Why does Charlie come and be like, this is what I can do for the team?
Right?
Like,
yeah.
Like Charlie should have just turned and pointed to and been like, Averman, I'm captain. We're benched. Banks is in. Like,
yeah. Okay, so now I want to know with the new girl, what was her name?
Julie.
Julie, the goalie?
Yeah.
Does she ever get to play a game, or is it literally just the shootout is the only time she ever plays for the Ducks?
Well, she gets the call in.
And thrown and then, out, and yeah.
Gets like that ridiculous penalty that wouldn't.
Yeah.
That would never be a real penalty.
Yeah.
At least not a five minute major like game misconduct penalty.
Yeah,
they just push two guys down to the ice.
But so
yeah,
that,
no, like literally the only time she gets called in is to for the shootout.
Okay, because I think that is such a dick move. Because he promised her, and she is the better goalie.
Mm-hmm.
She really is. But no,
I mean that comes to the forefront in the third movie.
Oh, see, I must not remember the third one.
She takes the starter position from Goldberg.
Okay.
The funniest thing about the third movie, to be honest, is the fact that the guy who plays Gunner is repackaged as a new character.
He's a goalie in the third one.
For D3, he plays Scooter.
But he's still into
Julie, yeah. And then him and Julie get together.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I had a lot of fun with when I looked through the credits of this movie is at the party, you've got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Christy Yamaguchi, Greg Louganis, Luke Robitaille, Chris Chelios, Cam Neely, and they're all credited as celebrity at party. But Wayne Gretzky is credited as Wayne Gretzky.
As himself.
Yeah. He gets the as himself, but like none of the other celebrities do. They're all just celebrity at party. And I found that funny for some reason.
That's funny, yeah. Cam Neely's career would have been already over by this point too, wouldn't it have?
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Who wants to appear in a movie? And then the kids become hoodlums again as they're like going down Rodeo Drive trying to scam everything. Uncle Aaron would be so disappointed. Did she actually believe them at first? Like, come on.
Yeah. This was another thing I remembered. When I first watched this movie, I had no idea who Aaron Spelling was.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And now that I know who Aaron Spelling is, I'm just the idea of Goldberg being Aaron Spelling's nephew is absurd.
quite absurd. But yeah, the store they go into is actually a real store. I was surprised by that. It's called Les Habitudes. And I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner. I was surprised.
It's not shocking to me that it's a real store, just because I feel like
product placement. Yeah,
this is the type of movie that would relish in any opportunity to like get money from somebody to showcase them.
Does Disney own Les Habitudes?
If they don't, I bet somebody has a family member who does.
Yeah, probably. Well, always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, D2, The Mighty Ducks, is brought to you by Greyhound Buses, Star Tribune and USA Today, General Cinema, Averman's movie theater was real too, Mickey's Dining Car, Easton, iTech, Starter, Cooper, Jofa, CCM, Vaughn, and Coho Sports Equipment, CNN and TBS, Olympia Zambonis, Mercedes, Les Habitudes, Little Caesars, Wheaties, and Coca-Cola. the can wall, which where they're trying to teach the one kid how to stop, is made up of Coke, Diet Coke, Cherry Coke, Minute Maid Orange, Mellow Yellow, Barks Root Beer, and Fresca. Plus the probably fictional Goldberg's Delicatessen and Hendrix Sports. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. I thought, what a stupid way to try to teach this kid to stop. Like, how labor intensive is it for them to restack these cans every time? Unless that's his punishment. Every time he crashes, he has to restack them himself. But they never show that part in the happy Disney montage.
I'm just looking up to see if Goldberg's Delicatessen is real.
Oh.
Doesn't look like it. Although, there is one. There is Goldberg's Famous Deli of Milburn in Milburn, New Jersey. But...
Ah. Yeah, nothing in Minneapolis or Minnesota or anything. Apparently anywhere in Minnesota. Okay, speaking of real things, you mentioned the Three Post where Gordon and Wolf are having their dick measuring contest. Is Three Post a thing? Have you ever heard of that game? I didn't know whether it was an actual, like... I feel like hitting a post is pretty skilled.
I mean, I've never heard of it called Three Polo, even though that makes sense. But I have heard of it as a game, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's like an impressive skill, I guess. I've never been very accurate with a hockey puck. That's my problem.
Yeah, not me either.
Yeah.
I'm not really a very good skater. But it's the same with the garbage cans. Like I feel like when you're trying to play hockey recreationally, goalie is always the hardest thing to find.
Yeah.
So then you have to find other ways of being able to play a competitive game, but, you know, kind of negate the goalie factor.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely from the age of car game on, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Goalie was always the scariest one because no one in the neighborhood had proper pads.
Yeah.
So it's like, you were risking road rash if you were goalie.
Yeah. Plus, everybody just takes slap shots. Yeah. So you're also just risking, massive bruises and, shattered orbital bones. And
Well, one thing I can tell you I've never referred to it as is schoolyard puck. That one definitely got me when Kenan Thompson comes and says, "Me and my boys will play you some schoolyard puck." And I'm like, what the fuck is schoolyard puck? Jesus.
Yeah, I'm also going to go on record right now of saying that on any given day in Southern California, in the Los Angeles area, there is...
Zero?
I was going to say, nobody is playing street hockey.
Yeah.
I'm almost willing to guarantee it.
Yeah. That's a tall order. Yeah.
People are playing basketball... There's no way on earth they're playing street hockey.
Yeah, most of those conversations would be like, "Hey, you want to play hockey?" What? What's hockey? That's probably how it would be going down there.
I appreciate the scene a little bit, even though I remember when I watched it when I was younger, I thought it was cool, but watching it now, I'm like, it seems a little bit tone deaf. But I almost would have appreciated it more if it was like, they were basketball players, going back to the whole these guys are treating hockey like basketball aspect. Yeah. Of like, hey, what if the way that we win, like, just lean into it real hard, what if the way that we win is we go and we play basketball with these guys, and mm-hmm. then we learn to like take the principles we learned in basketball and apply them to hockey in order to beat Iceland.
Yeah, that could
basketball,
be it.
The truest American game made by a Canadian, but still.
Yeah, no, I will say that, and I also, I mean, if we want to add to the diversity counter, I appreciate that Charlie backs out because Russ automatically thinks he's going to be cut from the team, and it's like Charlie's like, "Whoa, no, wait. We brought two black kids back because we wrote his brother out for some reason." You know, yeah. So We got to keep our diversity count up. I mean, hell, we brought in this Hispanic kid, too. We've got Luis on our team now.
And we got an Asian.
Yes. Yeah, and an Asian. So this white guy, I'm going to back off, and I'm just going to assistant coach.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that goes back to the fact that Joshua Jackson didn't know how to skate before the first movie, if I remember my trivia correctly from that episode.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was because it never really dawned on me how, like I said before, how in the background Charlie is in this movie. I remember him being more at the fore, but he's clearly not.
No, yeah.
But then it also made me, what he goes from being the hero in the first movie, and then he again is like the main protagonist in the third movie, but all of a sudden in this movie it's like he's not a good player anymore. He's not one of their best.
Like,
I think Banks is obviously the best player, but I've always thought Charlie, it might have been like a tie for like Charlie and Jesse for two.
Yeah, that's their McDavid Draisaitl line, that kind of thing. you know, like, I mean, I don't know what Charlie's deal is at all. That's my biggest thing. It's like, it just seems like he just doesn't care about hockey at all anymore. As soon as the fun's gone, it's like do you care about competitive sports at all, Charlie? Or were you just in it for the fun? Because you shouldn't be on Team fucking USA if the competitive fire is gone, buddy.
Yeah, that character is really lost in this movie.
Yeah.
Could we take a moment to talk about Banks' injury?
The fact that he goes through, like, three games before, like, they even realize that he's actually injured.
Yeah. But also, even as a kid, the scene where he gets injured has always bothered me.
Okay.
Because he does his little celebration, and then for whatever reason, he just decides to stick his arms straight out for it to get, like, hacked.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just like, why are you... I don't know. I've just never seen anybody do that. Like, maybe that was his personal celebration was almost like a hockey Sig Heil. I don't know. But
well, and the ref obviously saw it enough to give the guy a 2-minute penalty. It's like, no, that should have been what someone gets thrown out of the game for. Yeah. 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 Those refs were all over the place. See, that's why I start game furious.
But yeah, he does play a few more games on it, and it doesn't really seem to be limiting his production at all.
No, and then all of a sudden he has to hold up a stick, and he can't do anything with it at all.
And then just as fast as he needed to come out, all of a sudden he wakes up, and after like what I'm assuming is a couple more days, and it's all better.
Perfect. Yeah, perfect bill of health. Yeah.
Strange.
Well, the what I like is when you know, Gordon starts going on his like, whatever, you know, the team doesn't need me to be close, I'll just accept all this money and all that sort of stuff, and he gets washed up in the Hollywood scene of having his picture taken. I like that when he comes back though, after he realizes, after Jan has talked to him, that he comes in late, so he almost forfeited the game for them.
Yeah,
and he comes in blowing his whistle, making a big fucking scene, and then uses a timeout to apologize to the team. Like, it's like, dude, why were you late?
I didn't get that at all. The only thing I could think of for the reason why he was late is because he had to catch an early flight back to Minnesota to grab the duck call and then make it back for the game.
Well, he also went for the dusk morning skate, because they had to repeat that scene from the first movie as well. But this one's in California, so he's in rollerblades instead. Just like the first movie. Yeah, just like the first movie.
As an adult watcher of this movie, I kind of feel like they should have, in the montage of him getting all his pictures and being like surrounded by
going
sexy
Hollywood
girls and all that stuff, they should have thrown in a couple of him just like snorting blow off of a toilet seat and stuff, and like just getting
driving
ripped.
Drunk again.
To show how far
he does have a problem. Yeah, we know that from the first movie. Yeah. But no, instead we get the back to basics montage, you know, because finally he's like, maybe I should coach this team, you know, like how to teach Mendoza to stop, you know, maybe that's a skill. Fuck. What I love is during the montages too, they show the progress of Team USA as they're going through all this. And most of the headlines in the newspapers usually are like, you know, like humiliating ones, but quietly they have USA downs Canada. It's done very quietly, you know, no score, no humiliating headline. They focus on the Bash Brothers is what the actual focus of the headline is. But it's like, no, okay, yeah, USA took out Canada. Because they knew that if anyone was going to be upset by some, you know, the hosers get hosed or something, we were going to start a war.
Hey, what's all that about?
What's all that about? Yeah. And, you know, and Wayne Gretzky blesses Team USA. Come on, Wayne. You're Canadian. But I guess he
I never even thought about that.
He would have been on LA. Why at the time.
I mean, I guess they had Mike Modano in the first one, but like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they wanted a Gretzky cameo, but sure, there's like some legit USA all stars that they could have gotten. Like, what about Brett Hull or?
Yeah,
I can't even think of any offhand right now, but
there's others. Yeah,
there's
Tom Pody. I don't know.
of that era, who would have been like the Mike Modano's like the only guy I can think of.
Well, Chris Chelios.
Now I can think of lots, but in the 90s, yeah, there's only like Chelios, Modano. Nowadays they could have got like Austin Matthews.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they would have still gone for Sidney Crosby or something. It's more recognizable. Alex Ovechkin gives them Team Canada a blessing. I don't know. Or Team USA, I guess. Team USA. We're in the States. I forgot about that. I don't know. My only thought is because he was in L.A., right? Like, that would have been before he ended up going to New York. So we get into the final. Banks is better, so Charlie selflessly gives up his slot on the roster. Yeah, this is where I really start sympathizing with Wolf, though, because it's like, yeah, he's just coaching better than Gordon. Even after Gordon has had his epiphany, he's still better at it. Like, Gordon should be... You know how movies, when it's a big top-secret project, they'll film under a false name so that you don't know, like, the new Avengers film is actually filming? They'll give it some special name. You know, maybe that's what you need to do with your calls, you know? Get rid of Flying V as one of your calls. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the Flying V, the worst fake move in... Well, no, the Triple Deke is the worst move that we're supposed to believe is some, you know, assassin of a maneuver.
Yeah. Yeah, and see, now, as part of what you were saying about how this is, like, not realistic hockey at all, you know, Kenny Wu ends up getting them on the board with his move, but then he gets a penalty, and so it should now be a 5-on-4. Then both Bash Brothers also get a penalty, so it should be a 5-on-3.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, no power play pressure on the ice. Like, they have enough time to get the lasso on the ice during what should be, you know, a 5-on-3.
Yeah, like, the Goodwill Games, apparently, like, there's no penalties have no consequence.
Yeah, none whatsoever. Yeah. And neither does Goldberg's shitty play. Like, that's the other thing. Iceland is obviously Goldberg's kryptonite. Why did they not start Julie? Like, fuck you, Gordon. You're playing favorites. That's what you're doing. She's the better goalie. I don't care if you say Goldberg's on a streak.
I mean, Goldberg also, he is, he does my most hated goalie thing that a goalie can do, in that he constantly tries to play the puck at the back of the net.
Yeah, yeah.
When there's, like, tons of pressure. Like, I hate that. That's, you're just asking to get scored on.
Yeah.
Mike Smith.
Yeah, I watched the All-Star game, or the All-Star skills, and there's a new one where the goalie has to try to hit a goal from their end of the net, and I'm like, you're encouraging them to play the puck? Fuck.
Yeah.
Stop the puck, leave it for your star. God. Yeah, because I'm a professional coach. I'm as professional a coach as Emilio Estevez is.
I mean, yeah, the championship game, we get the full court press alley-oop play that, I mean, kind of dubious on whether that would even is
was it onside? Yeah,
like how do you avoid offside on that?
Yeah. Yeah.
How does the goalie not just bat it out of the air or catch it?
Yeah. Yeah. Because it confuses him. He's not used to looking up.
Ooh,
yeah. Yeah. Now, I've always wondered with the figure skate, you know, anytime they bring figure skaters into a Mighty Ducks movie, they're different skates. Like, so is he allowed to have skates with picks out there? Because he's not doing the jump with in hockey skates.
I don't
skates,
know if he would, but he's. I mean, I think in the movie he is, but I would question whether or not that's, like, actually physically possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I always wonder how many of the Ducks things that they do are actually legal. You know, like...
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's hard because, I mean, for kids anyways, I'm going to say that. They were definitely very entertaining movies. Although there are times watching this one now where, like, there's one example specifically where, like, Aberman, like, goes behind the net to skate the puck out, and then for some reason he's just skating like he's in slow motion. Like, it was specifically for the Iceland team to come at speed, get the puck from him, and score. And I was just like, there are certain things where I'm like, oh, like, the choreography, I guess we'll call it, is... It's, like, just not realistic enough.
Well, yeah, like, Russ
let some things go, but...
Yeah, Russ takes so long to get his knuckle puck off because he gets out there, and then he rips off his mask and has to drop his gloves. They have to skate a different stick out to him. They're surprised to see, wait, that's not Goldberg. How did they even switch jerseys?
Yeah, I was going to say, even before that, how long is an intermission? I mean, a timeout.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I thought it was a minute.
Maybe a minute,
I thought maybe a minute. Like, how does Wolf not look over and see, like, hey, look, the two black guys are switching gear.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. How long does it take to get goalie pads on? I feel
like a long time.
I feel like there's a lot of buckles and yeah.
Yeah, it's not like street hockey gear where there's just clips.
Yeah.
Like, you got buckles and all sorts of stuff.
And they switched jerseys.
Through the skate.
So yeah. And he also had like goalie jerseys on or goalie pads on underneath too, like the extra bulky chest plate.
Also, if you're going to go through the whole rigmarole of switching into the goalie pads, for the con, why are you keeping your jersey?
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't you... Why does Russ keep his jersey and not switch into Goldberg's jersey?
No, he does.
Does he?
Yeah, he's wearing Goldberg's jersey. That's the thing. Yeah, they switch pads and jerseys.
Okay. Yeah. Bizarre.
That's one hell of a quick change.
Masterful coaching.
Masterful coaching, that's all it is. Yeah, but so we get our second period intermission and we get the "who are you" pep talk, you know. Yeah, because we're Team USA gathered from all over the country. Sure you are, but they needed
Ducks.
but we gotta be ourselves. So luckily Jan had the foresight to have Ducks jerseys made up. He hired a graphic designer to come up with a new symbol and everything. Yeah.
And then he sold it to the NHL for millions.
I guess so. That must be what it is. Yeah. Like,
retired comfortably.
Yeah. House of Mouse needs to sell their merch. I mean, that's all that matters. But yeah, so they come out and all of a sudden they're the Mighty Ducks of the USA or whatever.
The USA Ducks.
The USA Ducks. And we're third period energized, so Sophie scores, they've got the alley-oop play. Mendoza finally stops. Oh my god, and he scores. But like I was watching the whole third period and I'm like, and you still haven't put the girl goalie in. Like, what the hell? I'm starting to get personally offended on her behalf.
Yeah,
because like, it's like she came to you. She came to you and said, put me in, coach.
And also, especially because going into that second intermission, they're actually down like 4-5-1.
Yeah.
Fuck, so like, goalie. Why wouldn't you just put Julie in?
Yeah. Fuck. And so I guess there's no overtime in a championship game too, hey? They just go straight to the shootout?
Yeah, I thought that was weird because I was thinking like in the World Juniors, you play a, you don't go straight to shootout. You play an overtime period.
Yeah.
First, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, so Goldberg still gets to take the first two shots in the shootout. Like, he doesn't even put her in for the shootout. He puts her in for one shot in the shootout. Like the announcer says, like, this is so unconventional, putting in a cold goalie for one shot. Like, you kidding me? Mm-hmm. But I don't even know if that's allowed. Like, can you pull a goalie in a shootout?
Well, I know back, well, I don't know. I wonder what the NHL rule is. I remember when the shootout first became a part of the NHL rules. Yeah. There was a time where the Oilers, I remember specifically, basically had like a shootout specialist goalie. So they'd have like, I don't know, what whoever it was, like Ty Conklin at the time would play the whole game. And then this guy, Mike Morrison, would come in and do the shootout.
Oh, okay. See, I don't remember that. Huh.
I wonder what the rules are with that. If you could just I don't.
If your goalie got injured, you'd be allowed to swap him, right? Yeah. If he went and pulled a hammy on one of the saves.
I don't see why you wouldn't be, because, I mean, in a game, you can pull, you could switch goalies at any time.
Yeah.
So I feel like it stands to reason that you would be allowed to.
Yeah. Huh. And then I also feel like the you lost it for me, you lost it for yourself moment is unearned. Because, like I said, I kind of side with Wolf. I think he was a good coach. And it's like...
Yeah, that was an interesting thing because I... That is like an iconic line to me. But you're right. Watching it now, I was just like...
Comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, like you don't even really get to know what the relationship dynamics are on the Iceland team at all throughout the thing, and you based on everything that you know about Iceland, and they're just kind of like hockey playing robots.
Yeah,
you kind of expect that Gunnar would just be dejected, but take it.
Yeah, like that.
But then all of a sudden, it's as if we've known who Gunnar was the entire time, and he says that line, and then he goes and tells Charlie good job and all that, and we're supposed to be like, oh yeah, Gunnar, our pal.
Yeah, yeah. Because was Gunnar was the one that was sent in to injure Banks, right? Like who slashed Banks?
I can't remember. I don't think. You're thinking of the first movie.
Okay.
In D2, like it just happens. Nobody specifically like sent is like specifically told to go target him, but in the first movie. One of the Hawks is like specifically sent to like check him and smash his head into the pool.
Yeah, see, because you can look at something like Karate Kid where you don't have to spend much time with Johnny Lawrence to understand that he, you know, like his character growth. Whereas with Gunnar, it's like, okay, why you know, where'd this you lost it yourself line come from? What's the motivation?
Oh man, Disney Plus Cobra Kai is ending. Get on the Gunnar Stahl reboot. Let's flesh this guy out.
That's right. That's where Game Changer should go in season 3. So the Ducks win, of course. And then we get the closing credits with the campfire sing along of We Are the Champions. And then during the credits, what the fuck is this Mighty Ducks of America song? I've never heard this song before in my life, and I was so fascinated by it. Like, I don't know, were you, like, did you listen to Mighty Ducks soundtracks? I don't know whether they're really known for their soundtracks, are they?
No, I did not.
But yeah, I couldn't believe this Mighty Ducks of America song that was playing at the end. I'm like, this is the weirdest thing ever. Am I hallucinating this song right now?
I just thought of the perfect way for game. I mean, to watch season two, but the perfect way for Game Changers to bring back Emilio Estevez for whatever happens in the third season is for that team to go to Iceland and find that Coach Bombay is coaching the Iceland team with Gunnar as his assistant.
There it is. There it is. Yeah. We don't know what happened to him this season. I mean, did he have another situation where he forgot who he was and so then he had to be pulled back in? Because so far, both movies, that's what's happened. He's forgotten himself. Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah, he was definitely missing on the show in the second season. It was disappointing. Josh Duhamel, he tried his best. But at least he's a believable as a hockey player sized. I believe him as an ex-hockey player.
Nice. Maybe I will go check it out now.
Well, there we go. That is D2, The Mighty Ducks. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored 6.1 out of 10 and has a Metascore of none listed. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 21% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 59%. But Colin, those are just numbers, like a knuckle puck to the face. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. Andrew A. gives the movie 1.5 out of 5 stars and says, I liked it as a kid just because I liked hockey, but watching as an adult, it's hard for the nostalgia to save this one. It's so unbelievably Disney in every way. The hockey scenes aren't even well done. There's one cheesy, cringy line after another. The whole coach loses his way and then has to find himself again and prove he's of worth to his team of juveniles was already done in the first movie. I get that it's aimed at children, but it's even more childish than the first. I wanted to like this one, and I can't let quite a bit of nonsense slide for the sake of nostalgia, but this one just... I can let quite a bit of nonsense slide for the sake of nostalgia, but this one just isn't a good film.
Yeah, I mean, you brought it up earlier where it feels like the better story is the everybody is an underdog story rather than we're coming in with a cocky attitude and forgot who we were. Yeah.
Michael W. says 3.5 out of 5 stars. This hockey movie was really good. It wasn't as great as the first one, but it was still worth seeing. Emilio Estevez and the rest of the cast did an excellent job in this movie. The plot to the movie is great and it doesn't disappoint. It's about working together as one to accomplish your ultimate goal, no matter how difficult it can be, and having fun in the process. For those that said this movie was terrible, all of you have terrible tastes in movies. This is a movie I would recommend to anyone.
Well, then.
Taking on the haters.
Yeah. Preemptive strike. Like... Yeah.
And then the last one is... It's from Matt T. He gives it 0.5 out of 5.
Nice.
It says, not worth seeing. Sorry. Sorry, I got...
Oh, I thought that was it, okay.
No. I got a little bit of a sore throat, so I just got caught. He says, not worth seeing. So cliched, there isn't any mention of Canada or the Russians, despite them being the two biggest hockey nations at the time. Just Disney marketing.
It's 100% Disney marketing.
Mm-hmm. Most of the reviews I read all basically say, like, that it's a down... It's just not as good as the first one, and it's just kind of too cliched and... I don't know, surface level, for lack of a better phrase, I guess.
Yeah. Right on. So yeah, 6.1 and 59 out of audiences and 21 and no Metascore out of critics. Yeah, it's a Mighty Ducks movie. I mean, no matter what, like, it is a Mighty Ducks movie, but I really feel like it was, the focuses were in the wrong place of this movie, and I side with a lot of those reviews where it's just like, well, nostalgia will get you through it, but it's definitely not the better of the Mighty Ducks movies, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice seeing something like Game Changers now is kind of fixing some of the problems from some of these movies, but yeah, this is another one of those that falls under the category of there is a better movie there. We didn't get to see it. Yeah, there's some threads that, you know, the gelling of the team is a more interesting story, and that's what the charm of the first one was figuring out how to make all these ragtag kids work together. And we didn't introduce the new characters in a ragtag, getting them to work together way enough for this movie to work. If you're going to copy the movie, then copy the movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I didn't think Bombay was that bad for taking the job. I mean, his career was over. He had to figure out a new approach, so he was fine. I didn't think Wolf was a bad coach, so I didn't feel like there was truly a villain in this movie. It was hockey played slowly.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, that this movie was perfect for my childhood self, but as an adult, it's like you realize how much better it could have been.
Yeah.
And so like part of me is like, I'm like, obviously it's a movie for kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. But it's like the adult in me is like, but there is such a better movie there if you just like took the time to like, you know, elaborate on some story, like create the personal connection between Wolf and Bombay, create like show the like building of the team and more than just like a montage, actually use the tournament as a device to like tell story other than like showing cool stuff in each game.
You're montaging the wrong things.
Yeah,
is kind of the problem. Yeah, you're using the Disney formula, like that one review said, it's a Disney movie through and through, because it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, look at these kids getting up to wacky hijinks that have no consequences apparently, but those are funny to the kids, but for the story wise, you're glossing over the story with it's another movie with four or five montages, but the montages are the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of funny because I would have said at the beginning of this movie that D2 was my favorite of the franchise.
Yeah.
But now I actually, after watching it again, I think that it's my least favorite.
Okay.
Just because it's got the most, it's just the most like nonsensical and the most holes in the story. I think The first one is just like that great underdog, like coach. He learns some sort of lesson and he learns like what life is about, and he learns how to have fun and that it's not all about winning and all that. Again, you have the personal connection between the hero and the villain and that kind of stuff.
Definitely.
And it's the same, this, like the third one, like to anybody who hasn't seen D3, I would highly recommend it because it used to be my least favorite one. But it actually has, its story is because in that one, Bombay is gone, and it's like now the team has to contend with, they are the Ducks, they're the big shots, and they're getting a new coach, and they're having to learn a new way of playing hockey while also contending with like being the junior varsity team and wanting to be spots. And there is internal strife in the team because Banks makes the varsity team while other players don't and all that stuff. Like there's... Charlie and Fulton both quit the team because they can't hack it, and you see like a lot of growth in the characters, specifically in Charlie again because he's more at the forefront of that one again. Yeah. So I highly recommend you watch D3, and yeah, as unfortunate as it is, D2 I think is in the premise of this podcast, I feel like D2 is, I can safely say, it's a movie that does not hold up I had hoped it would.
Yeah, see, and as you're describing D3, I'm sitting there going, I don't know if I've seen D3 because I don't remember a Mighty Ducks without Emilio Estevez. So,
Yeah, he's only in it briefly, like at the beginning and at the end.
He's passing the torch.
Yeah.
Yeah. He made a 3-picture deal and he's like, ugh, do you really need me there for the whole thing? Well, there we go. That is D2, The Mighty Ducks, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, tell people. Word of mouth spreads so much for a show that's trying to find an audience, just helps build an audience, helps get more ear. I'm just going in circles. Tell people, get more people listening to our show, or go to whatever app you're listening to your podcast on and give us some stars. Go give us some stars and a little review. It just helps drive us up the charts, helps us get noticed. Or if you want to go above and beyond, become a producer of the show. Go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Become part of our Patreon family. And you become an executive producer and get a shout out, just like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And be sure to check out our... now I've had a brain fart. Be sure to check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all our podcast episodes and social media pages. And drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and try to... Hello and welcome to I fucked that one up.
Man, are you smelling any burnt toast or anything? Should I be concerned?
No, I'm doing okay. All right. I'm heavily sunburned. That's my excuse, yeah.
Gotcha.